Good morning, and if you just tuned in, you are listening to Clear Story, and we are absolutely delighted that we have a poet, and should we say it's sort of like a cowboy poet, but you're a poet farmer. Jim Minnick, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And I have thoroughly enjoyed reading about blueberries and about blueberry farming, and the blueberry years took me by surprise, Jim, because I thought you were a farmer who decided to write a story. You know, how people say, oh, you were to write about whatever, that farming thing you did. But instead, you were a writer who happened to also farm some blueberries.
Well, thank you. That's a nice way of putting it. And yeah, that's kind of how it worked out.
Tell me about this memoir. Obviously focuses on the farming aspects and beautifully describes a lot of things in a community, your sense of loneliness and the rawness of the work that you had to undertake, and then this absolute love for things organic and blueberries in particular. But where did the writing in your life begin?
From very early on, I knew that I wanted to write. I didn't know for sure what angle that would take, but one of my first poems was written in sixth grade for our teacher, who was Mrs. Haller, and I think we all had a crush on her, and so the poem, I don't remember the specifics of it, but it was called Hot Lips Haller. She actually is still in touch and came to my reading in my hometown just a couple weeks ago, so that was real sweet.
That is real sweet. And I'm sure she was absolutely delighted, and she recognized at once that you had true writing talent.
She nurtured it as well as many other teachers, as well as through college, and I had a chance to spend some time with an influential teacher in college just recently as well, from 20, 25 years back. So, you know, and my parents were great providers of good books to read throughout. So, you know, it's been a very nurturing wonderful life and community, and so I knew all along I wanted to write. The farming was another question.
You made a big leap from sixth grade now to having this absolutely beautiful hardback published with St. Martin's Press. Tell me a little bit about that journey. Where to begin? Yeah, where to begin that story? If somebody just ambled up to you in a bar and said, what's your story and how did you get here in this publishing business? What would you say?
I majored in English in college because I knew I loved it and I knew I wanted to write, but I knew I could make a living doing it, so I went into teaching. Both my parents taught. And I enjoyed teaching, and I that's how I fund all my other habits, like writing and farming. But so I taught for a long time, went back to grad school so that I could write some more, and then finally, after writing for several years, I had a couple books come out in 2005, essays, and a couple in poetry in 2008, but I've been working on this memoir for many years in many different forms, and finally found an agent after a couple of years of searching, and then it took her another couple of years of finding the editor. So it's been a long, arduous journey, but it's been a good one.
It is a good one, but a lot of people that are first, you have a wonderful line in here about spies, you know, showing up in your field to pick blueberries. And you know that they're spies, and by that you mean people that are planning on undertaking this blueberry adventure, so to speak, right? And they start asking you a lot of questions, you know, kind of staying close to you instead of wandering off down in the field, you know, picking alone. And you begin to be able to recognize them, and you always tell them, you know, we're not making any money at this, basically. But you have a great line in there, and I don't have it open to that page, Jim, that says something to the effect that who are you to kill their dreams?
Right.
And I imagine, I immediately thought about the analogy of how that transposes to writing and how many people come up to you and when you're writing and they want to be a writer like you are. So who are you to kill their dreams, even though you might, you know, want to offer some sage advice like, you know, we're not making any money at this, right?
Right. So, you know, you just give them some advice, or if it's writing or blueberries, try to be honest, but yeah, don't be rude about, hey, you can't do this. Let them pursue it. Maybe they will do it.
Are you still in contact with the neighbors that you went to visit that are basically characters in the memoir?
I was when we moved away. I was for several years with Joe, who was the next door neighbor, who became a very good friend, and he had grown strawberries for over 40 years, and so he knew all kinds of things that he helped us a lot. But he was very much against organic and claimed that they were magic powders that I was spreading on the ground. Just a great, always kind of a hot seat that I sat in when I went to visit him. So when we moved away, it became an even interesting change in our relationship because he didn't travel, and it was a long ways for me to travel to go visit him. But he wrote letters, and I wrote letters back, and it was a great way for, I don't know how many, probably at least 3 or 4 years. 4 years we kept communicating through letters, and so that's been a great thing. And I'd like to write a book about him some year, but he died in 2007, and so he was the only one that I really kept in touch with. But there's been a few, occasionally I'll hear from other pickers or neighbors, but he was the main one.
And you bought a special piece of equipment from him.
Yes.
That you only use one time.
Right. With his help.
Yeah, with his help, which is a great, I don't want to give it away, but it's just a great scene in the memoir, of you guys writing, and you kind of get the feeling he's laughing at you,
the whole time.
Jim, what hard physical labor. I'm reading how your wife is such an excellent picker, and I'm thinking my husband would never say that about me, and just imagining you guys working side by side on this farm and this incredible physical labor that you undertake. I that's something that seems to be passing away.
I grew up on a farm or spent a lot of time on a farm, so I appreciated that work ethic. My wife learned it from her parents as well, and I don't know that. I see that some in the students I teach, but I also see a lot of, they're just used to getting things given to them.
And fast food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could relate to a lot of it because I grew up in the rural South and spent a tremendous amount of time with my grandparents and one of my grandfathers where we stayed at the creek at a small farm.
One of the beauties of where we live now, I've been doing a lot of forestry work, which is a nice balance to writing in terms of, with the blueberries, you have to do certain things during a certain time of year or other things wouldn't happen. And so you're much more tied to a timeline. But with forestry work I'm doing now, it's if I don't do it, oh well. What I do definitely improves the overall forest, but I can set the schedule, and so I can write. My ideal day is to write all for 6 hours and then go out and work for a couple.
You're also a poet, and you're an essayist, and tell me where those things spring from, either the inspiration or the passion that pulls you to the page to write your essay.
I actually started as a way to fill an obligation for a master gardener's class that we were taking, and we were taking it in the middle of doing the blueberry farm, and I didn't, and so when you take a master gardener's class, you have to, in addition, commit to some volunteer time to repay for taking this class, and I was, all the other volunteer projects were hoeing and mulching community flower gardens, and I was just not interested in that, doing more of that when we were doing that all the time on our farm. So this other opportunity came up to write a nature column for the local paper, so I sent in a sample, and the editor said, would you like to write regularly? So that's how that started. But so the inspiration for those, same with poetry, is often twofold. Something like I walk every day as much as possible, and I'll often find something to trigger image or an idea that will take shape into an essay or a poem, or stories. The other angle is stories about people or people in places, or ways of seeing that I see in people. So those I think they often come from kind of the same roots, both the essays and the poetry.
And where do you see at this moment, after you have had this incredible book? St. Martin's did such a beautiful job with it, and as someone who appreciates books, I mean, that's something I'm paying attention to, and just the layout of it and the photographs in it are just wonderful quality. So after you have this accomplishment, which I know is just really, really fresh right now, and you're traveling everywhere and reading and introducing people to the Blueberry Years, but are you already working on another writing project, or where do you see yourself going next in your writing career?
I am. I'm working on a novel, which is a brand new venture, and trying to understand a long story. I mean, the memoir was great practice for thinking about a book-length story, and so I've been working on this novel for a couple of years now. It's based on a folk healer, which actually was my great-grandmother, who could cure warts and stop burns.
Would you please read for us Blue Interlude, if you don't mind? I would love to hear you read, and I love the words, and obviously your influence and your gifting as a poet, you know, are show up in the book in wonderful ways, and I think, you know, this is one of the places that really showcases that talent.
Great, thanks. Just a little prelude. Blue Interludes are short chapters that I put throughout the book that celebrate. Mostly, they celebrate everything blueberry. So there's blueberry histories and blueberries in literature and the health benefits of blueberries. But I also realized that in a class I was taking with Darnell Arnold one time that blueberries are not just blue. So this is called Other Colors. Sure, it's blue. Blue jean blue. Bluebird blue. Deep blue of these blue mountains. And if untouched, it should also have a veil of white, cloud cover over this ocean globe. But it's also a blue tinged with purple, purple of royalty, purple of the shadows hiding inside its blossom's cup. The tint of dark comes out. If the berry hangs too long in the bush, becomes overripe. And also when the bloom of whiteness rubs off between fingers as it travels its purpling road from bush to finger to mouth. Purple pops when a blueberry is cooked. Then the heat of oven performs an alchemist trick, turning blue to purple of pastries, purple of slumps, purple of cobblers and jellies and pies, purple bubbling under a batter of grunt, purple to stain your teeth. Before a blueberry turns blue, it really is pink, the blush of a child's cheek, the soft red of a sunset as it slowly burns down the shoulder of a green mountain, pink turning to red, turning to blue. Like a sunset, all of this slow coloring happens at such a pace that you fail to notice until night falls and the stars speckle the blueberry sky. For a pink, a blueberry really is a greenberry, the size of a pea, but harder and not as dark, not hidden in a pod, but out tinged with red at the very lips of what used to be a blossom tip. A bush in a field full of bushes, these tiny green orbs dangle like thousands of clappers inside thousands of invisible bells. Before all of this, before the purple and blue and green, a blueberry really is white. And this white really is a bell. The bell of a blossom that rings and rings the invisible din of scent. All of it healing the blue sky with waves of sweetness. All of it music to a bumblebee's ears.
That's just absolutely beautiful. This is a great work, like The Ecology of Cracker Childhood. Did you read that?
Yeah. I love that book, and I know Janice Ray. She's a good friend.
Well, I thought of you. I thought of her book as I was reading this one, And because you do talk about the situation that farmers are going through and organic farmers and that, you know, the health benefits of blueberries, you know, basically I should let listeners know they stop the hands of time and reverse all ill effects. You know, there's magic in the blue, right? And it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, just if anything ails you and you're worried about growing older, just go eat organic blueberries and all will be well. But, well, Jim, I love the book. Now, where can people find you or see you in person?
Heading to Charlotte this weekend, and then in the beginning of November, I'll be in the Central Virginia, Richmond area, and then I'll be in the Western North Carolina mountains following that, as well as Roanoke. I'm in the middle of a book tour throughout the South.
I look forward to just following your journey and see where you're going next, and also reading your novel, because you're a wonderful writer, and I love the fact that you have the balance of the earth and nature and family and community and other things going on in your life. And I know that that will be incorporated into your new novel as well.
Well, thank you very much, River. It's been a great pleasure talking to you.
And thank you, Jim.